These few days together have been introducing you to the importance of awareness and suggesting how we can work with the clouds that roll across our awareness and shield us from its brightness, from its all pervasiveness, and how to identify things that we need to work with, we need to open up to, so that our awareness becomes more polished, becomes more bright, and we begin to aspire to what is a very, very great mystery. Something that we thought was a part of me, a part of mine, like my hearing is a part of me, my smell, my taste is a part of me, my awareness is a part of me. And it's all part of my possessions, all part of David's paraphernalia. We can learn very quickly, I think, to discover actually that awareness actually doesn't belong to David. It doesn't actually belong to this person. It isn't one of my possessions. And we begin to discover that truth when we learn to come into our body and actually begin to see that actually this isn't a part of this makeup that for the most part seems to exist in my head, that actually it is beyond. Somehow it sits behind the world that we create, the world that we get lost in, the world that brings us confusion and all the experiences that we have. Somehow there is that which sits behind. We begin to taste that, we begin to see, maybe we already know it, just sort of making assumptions, but we begin to awaken to the possibility that there really is something beyond me, that there's something beyond David. And this really, in many ways, is a part, is the dawning of the spiritual path, of actually awakening to that which is beyond me. Here we begin to go beyond the logic, the systems, the intellect, even the common sense sometimes, which I know many aspiring Buddhists like to hold on to and like to think that they can work out their salvation through books, through thinking, through their intellect, through doing things that somehow at some time they're going to be enlightened if they can just hit on the right formula. Well, actually, I would really, really like to meet the person that's pulled that off. Us Westerners, so many of us Westerners are convinced that that is the way, and we don't need this Eastern mentality, this Buddhist, this sort of mumbo jumbo that seems to be a part of the paraphernalia that goes with this path, that we can eject all that and all I need is the bare bones. And this is very much a Western invention. It certainly has never existed for 2,500 years, but this is the way of the Westerner. The Westerner always knows best. The Westerner fashions the Dharma to suit himself. It wants the Dharma to come to him on his conditions or her conditions, and certainly has no intention of going to the Dharma and the Dharma conditions. Well, if that's your path, let's get this one out the way to start with. All the best of luck. And when you manage to pull it off, please come and seek me out, because I'll be very interested to know how you've done it. Because I don't think it's ever been done, and it never will be done. So we have to learn to, in many ways, put our Western conditioning to one side and think, well, it's like everything else, we can work it out. And begin to open up to that which is beyond the intellect, something that doesn't really, as I say, make a lot of sense a lot of the time, something that we can't really grasp, certainly not intellectually, but something that maybe we have a feeling, an inkling, that maybe there is something beyond me, maybe there is something which we have to consider to be quite mysterious, because it's unknown. And you don't know how to make it known, because it doesn't come into our normal mode of working things out. And by learning to become more aware of our awareness, or awareness becoming more aware of itself. That polishing, which takes place because we are prepared to come back, to come back, to come back, to come back into the awareness. That's the polishing part. There isn't anything to do. We don't have to get a yellow duster out and some windoline and start to do anything in order for that polishing to take place. In order for that polishing to be happening, what we need to do is just simply come back to our awareness, to come back, to come back, to come back, to come back. And every time we come back, we're polishing it that little bit more. And that awareness that started off as a part of me and mind begins to take on a completely different perspective, a different feeling about it, that actually that maybe this isn't me, this isn't mine. And this awareness then, if we can begin to get that sense, get that feeling that actually that it is beyond me, that it's not a part of me, that actually it's something really quite mysterious. We begin to touch the mysteriousness of it, because it doesn't seem to have any shape, any colour, any weight, any form, any designations at all. And yet it is extremely real and very present. We begin, as I said a few minutes ago, I think this is where we embark upon the spiritual path, not the intellectual path, but the spiritual path. The spiritual path that doesn't exclude the intellect, but is a very small part of the whole practice, of the whole unfolding of insight and understanding. And for myself, a way that I found a way in, as it were, into this, because how do you get in there? You can't think your way in there. You can't work it out and sort of, you know, create an opening with your intellect with this. It doesn't work. In fact, the more you bring your intellect to it, the more it leads. So we have this great dilemma of how do we explore, how do we open up, how do we understand, when I have to leave myself to one side in order to do it. Well, this is very much the characteristic of the spiritual path. And it certainly isn't peculiar to Buddhism. I think this is very much a major characteristic in the spiritual path, from any religion, any spiritual discipline, is a learning to give up that which is in the way, because we discover that sense of me, that person that wants to know, is in fact the very thing that is actually preventing me from opening and understanding. So we're left with that dilemma. How do we get into that mystery? How do we open up to it? How do we begin to understand what this great thing is? And you know, the spiritual disciplines that are in place have several ways of offering a way in. It is, of course, through insight. But insight alone needs to be supported, needs to be nourished, inspired, needs a warmth, a human element brought to it. And this is where something like a devotional practice can be of tremendous benefit. Devotional practices aren't there for entertainment, they're not there just to fill spaces and make things a bit more interesting. There's a very deep understanding, a very deep wisdom that is ingrained, that underpins certainly traditional practices in all Buddhist traditions. They're grounded in wisdom, they're grounded in understanding, but they're also fashioned to help us to warm the heart, to inspire us, to begin to encourage that opening into the depths, into the unknown qualities of awareness. And that awareness, you know, that's a word. We start with the word, but then we discover that awareness is much more personal. It is somehow something that really supports us, something that embraces us, that something that we begin to live out of. And a way that we can begin to develop a relationship, because that's what we do. We begin to discover that then that awareness is something very precious, is something somehow we feel that this is very real and somehow something that supports us and helps us and learns to carry us through our life. And a way into, there are various ways, no doubt, a way in that, that certainly helped me and continues to help me is my major gateway, if you like, is the act of bowing. To lower the head is something which for a lot of us is not an easy thing to do, especially us Westerners. Us Westerners can have a great deal of difficulty and dismiss bowing as some sort of, you know, part of the trappings, part of the Easter trappings, or part of the mumbo jumbo that we don't need. But actually, I think until we learn to bow our head, I don't think our true nature, that the true aspiration of the spiritual path, is going to be possible. Whether we find it easy or whether we find it difficult is something that we need to nurture, and to turn our backs completely upon something like this, that the cultivation of humility, the cultivation of lowering our heads, is something that is not, I don't believe, is negotiable on the spiritual path. And for me, that's, I guess, just on a purely personal level, I've always felt right at the very beginning, when I first came to practice, came to the Dharma, came to Buddhism, I've always got a sense that for sure there was something that was actually beyond me, as it were, that was present, that was somehow a part of my life, that if I learn to be quiet and not fill my head with opinions and make sort of firm decisions based on my desires, fundamentally, if I learn to be quiet, somehow that part of me would help, would be present, would help to support and somehow guide me through different decisions that would have to be made in my life, whatever that may be. This wasn't logical. This wasn't the intellect. A sense other than me, a sense other than David, which is something I think most of us experience from time to time. Maybe some of us experience a lot of the time. This is beginning to awaken to that which is beyond me, and this awareness that we consider to be something very ordinary and something mundane, so mundane we don't even think about it. This awareness is very much the doorway into that which is beyond me. And to see more and more that awareness actually is more than the door, that awareness actually is that which is beyond me, and to learn to open up more. And the way that we develop a relationship, which I think we discover that we need to do, and we want to do, because we discover that this great mystery, because that's what it is, this great mystery that somehow is a part of us, that is a part of our life, this great mystery we want to grow into more, we see it as a way out beyond this person that's always wanting to control. And so we start to develop that relationship. We talk to it. We can do it in meditation. We can do it in quiet moments. But the act of bowing is also a way of communing, a way of learning to cultivate that relationship. And the way we cultivate the relationship with the Dharma, with the Buddha, with the truth, with our true nature, whatever you want to, because we've got many, many names, however you wish to bring that aspiration into your practice and realize how so important it is. It has one characteristic, and this is the characteristic, and it's a characteristic that is very much an affront to us as Westerners, as people who are so educated, that got such developed strong senses, sense of self and ego, is that what some of us like to do is make the Dharma come to us on our terms. But if that is your attitude, you will never ever develop a relationship. The way the relationship is developed is that we always go to the Dharma, always. And the Dharma, the Buddha, compassion, love, whatever you want to call it, your inner nature, your true nature, the warmth, your heart, many names, is waiting there, is waiting, that not only supports you anyway, but is waiting, is aching to reach out and help us in our quest to go beyond suffering, to go beyond that entrapment that we all experience. It is there waiting to help. The gate is through awareness. Awareness actually is our human heart. But we have to go to the Dharma. We have to learn, and the way that we do that is that we learn to open ourselves and to surrender and to give up this me, this mind, this thing that wants to control, this thing that says it knows everything and it's going to work it all out and I'm going to be enlightened and all the stuff that comes from that ego. Is that we have to learn, whether we like it or not, and by golly we don't like it, we have to learn to give all of that up. Not a bit of it, not share a little, hand out a little bit and keep a lot, but actually learn to give all of it up. Give it away. Give it back to the Buddha. This is not me, this is not mine. Learn to do that. Now how on earth can we do that? We can't do it intellectually. So we have to learn to develop that relationship where and learn through practice and through commitment how to surrender all of ourselves. We learn to give all of ourselves up with trust. To trust that which is beyond that self and ego. To trust that that is the real me. Is that which is beyond suffering. Is that which will support and carry us through our lives. And this relationship can only be nurtured by learning to surrender and by learning humility. Humility is a very high, profound human virtue. And we can't play games. We can play games with each other, but we can't play games with the Buddha, because the Buddha, and that humility, when it is genuine, when we learn to give ourselves up, when we learn to hand ourselves in, give away this sense of me and mine, that's when the Buddha will reach out and support and learn to, and help to carry us through decisions, through our lives, develop that spaciousness, that warmth of heart that we all would like, that we'd all desire, that we all aspire to. This is the path that allows these human qualities to come to fruit. And that humility, with the act of bowing, I put the best way to develop my relationship with my true nature, with my inner nature, with the true human heart. I've learned through bowing, and actually with the help of the Buddha, actually, to learn that when I bow my head, in those moments of bowing, to gather the whole of myself up, not just David and all of his stupidities, but also even all the understanding, all the wonderful things that can come out of this practice, because all of those things can become me and mine, and they do. Learn to gather all of those things up and then hand them back to the Buddha. The Buddha that's out there, the physical Buddha out there, is a reflection, a reminder of the inner Buddha, for me that is. And in those moments of just truly giving myself up as genuinely as possible, hand everything away. And I certainly know from my own personal experience that through that cultivation, through that just knowing how right that is, not intellectually right, but feeling and knowing that this is the spiritual path, the one of complete and utter surrender of me and mine. And I know through my willingness, through my trust, to trust, to let go, to not want to be in control all the time, to let go and let, as it were, something else support and carry. That takes faith, that takes trust, and it takes a lot of nurturing, because we don't want to let go, we want to be in control. And the thought of not being in terrifying. So learn little by little to give up that which wants to control, hand it into something that we begin to see more and more is so vast, is so great, is so inconceivable, and yet it is me, and yet it isn't me. I'm open to trust. I believe this is the spiritual path, not a wishy-washy, not a sentimental, certainly not none of those things, something that's actually very, very grounded, because what it will do, if you are genuine in that cultivation, you will take into realms, be taken to places of fear and insecurity. It is not something up in the air at all. It is something very real and very much on the ground, very concrete in your experience. So don't imagine that this is some airy-fairy thing. It is most certainly is not. It is very dark. It evokes all the emotions that we have within us. But learning to trust that which is beyond me, learning to allow it, invite it into our lives, to learn to carry and support ourselves as we go through life, and the decisions that we have to make, and learning to bear with, learning to live life as it presents itself, the mystery that's presenting itself to us moment by moment, that we can never really know what's going to happen next to us. But learning to open to that, and learn to trust that somehow everything will be okay. I don't need to be in control. I don't need to protect myself, to put walls up to protect myself. All of those barriers, all this sense of this alien world, and all the fear and anxiety that brings up, that cultivates. Learn to, through the support of what is beyond me, that mission, however much you will need to trust, learn to develop a relationship with that which is beyond me, is, I think, such an integral, such an important part of the path of awakening, that I don't think awakening is possible in any other way. Sooner or later, we have to turn our practice, turn our minds, turn ourselves into that part of ourselves, into that area, to turn it away from this fellow that wants to guide it to enlightenment. Learn to give all of that up. And that often takes a lot of courage, and there's a lot of fear that comes out of losing that control. But this becomes a real possibility when we learn to open up and learn to trust that which we are becoming more and more familiar, that which we're becoming familiar is beyond me. Is beyond me, yet it is me. It is not me, and yet it supports me. And it most certainly loves me, and it wants to help. It aches to help. But we have to go to it. We have to open. It is not going to come and liberate us and solve our problems. We have to give those things up and learn to develop this relationship, one of surrender, genuine surrender, a genuine giving ourselves up, a genuine humility of actually not wanting, and of learning to open up and to surrender into that. What comes out of that? The support is quite remarkable. It is quite indescribable. It is not a person, it's not something that has a motivation, that has some understanding of how it can help, whatever. This is the all-knower. This is that which knows. It is that which is perfect. It is that is not an individual with individual motivations and desires. It is that which is all-embracing. It is that which is all of life. It embraces and is all of life, all humans, all of life. We begin to see that we are a part of that, and we, in fact, we are it. And the more we can open up, the support and the strength that can be handed to us, usually in times of great difficulty. And I know personally, you know, I was once taken to the absolute limit of my mental, emotional ability during a particularly difficult time. And I had nothing, absolutely nothing. Nothing and no one could possibly have helped me. And the only thing I could do would be to turn around and run away from it, somehow get out of it, because it was just, it was too big, it was too much. But in that time leading up to that experience, I had cultivated this relationship, learned to trust and to open, and learned to be carried by that which, that the mystery, my inner nature, my true nature. I learned to open up little by little, cultivate that relationship over a period of time. And the time when I needed it, I needed help, support, like no other time in my life, when I was completely at my end, that I surrendered, opened and completely surrendered and said, I need help, I cannot, this is too much. And that wisdom, that support, that warmth came and supported me and encouraged me and inspired me and helped to create that buoyancy and that confidence to sit through what was a very, very difficult time with fear and loneliness and desolation and everything. But it allowed me, it supported me, so that fire, if you like, could burn itself out, which it did. And so my gratitude, my faith is unshakable. I know it works. I know I've read things and we hear about these things, and a lot of us don't experience the truth of these things. But I do know from my own direct experience that all of these things are true. But we need faith, and we need a willingness to open and a willingness to give away this fellow that wants to control, this fellow that creates the world, this fellow that wants to, or excuse me, or female, that wants to create the world, manipulate, possess, that creates the samsaric world that has no end. Believe me, it doesn't. When they tell you in Buddhism that samsara has no beginning and no end, that's very true. It never has a beginning, it will never have an end. And that's true. We can have the ability to break that endless cycle. This is our potential, this is our possibility. But I don't believe it can truly happen until we learn to open up to that which is beyond me, whilst we stay in this little bubble of me and mine. However smart and clever it may think that it is, there is no way. It is impossible. It will never break out any more than it can lift itself off the ground. That humility that's nurtured, for me, I find that the gateway, what I find, I'm not a devotional person. For me, bowing is like it does it for me. It's all I need, I guess. For others, it may work also, I hope. But also the more devotional practices that are in all spiritual disciplines, they're not there because, you know, these things have been there for thousands of years. Bowing the head, surrender, has been there for thousands of years. You know, don't dismiss these things. You know, they're there, they're put there by wise people to help us. Learn to open and embrace and to use them, not be cynical and sceptical and think that you know better, because you don't, actually. It's all been done, thousands of years, and it's for us to open with humility and accept maybe things that we don't understand, things that don't make sense, things that don't fit my pattern of thought. Learn to open up, learn to surrender all of those notions, those ideas that actually will impede the path, will not allow us to walk down the path, however much we may convince ourselves that we are. And we can begin, if we've not already done this, and if we're not doing this, then it's something that we need to really bring into our our sense of practice. And this whole gateway into that which is beyond me, into the inconceivable, is through our awareness. And we live out of our awareness. We are our awareness. It isn't something alien to us. It isn't something that we have to go and find somewhere, that we have to sort of cobble together like we're making a cake or something, and get various ingredients and mix them all up, stir them up, stick it in an oven, and then get this thing out called awareness. Awareness is already here. It is whole and perfect. We're living out of our awareness. We are our awareness. This is how close we are to our true nature, to our home, to freedom, to liberation, to warmth, to love, to all the human qualities that come out of that stillness. They're there. We don't make any of it. None of it. You imagine if we were the one that made all of these qualities, if we were given the opportunity to make these qualities, and it was me that made them, by golly, what a monster I would make. Eh? I would rule the world, and all of you would be my slaves. This is the nature of self. It thinks of itself, and it lives for itself. It could not possibly create the qualities. It could not create awakening. It could not create the spiritual path. It's by giving up, by giving away all of that. Not a bit of it, not 10%, not 90%, not 99.9%, but 100% giving it up, and learning to open up to that more, what I would call the more spiritual, more devotional aspect of our makeup, which we can find, is very much a part of what we have to grow into. Sooner or later, some of us find that easy. Some of us find it, oh no, I'm not going to do that. Sooner or later, whether you like it or not, you will come to that. You will come to that impasse where you have to learn to give up your resistance and give up that which is stopping the path from fulfilling itself. For me, I've never had a problem with it. I'm a typical Westerner, you know. There's nothing, you know. I've got a very ordinary background. I've had no special sort of introduction to any of this. Far from it. If you knew my earlier life, I suspect a lot of you wouldn't be sitting here listening to me. But as you don't know, I won't tell you. So we'll leave that as a mystery as well. But even in the middle of all of that, I just always had this sense, and now I know that it is such a major support that makes this whole spiritual path possible. And maybe you have it, maybe you don't. But don't dismiss it, because if you do, then you will regret it. Open up to yourself, open up through awareness, begin to trust, begin to let, come to your awareness. When you abide in your awareness, when you're truly abiding in your awareness, there is no self, there is no controller, there isn't this fellow that's manipulating, that creates all the dukkha and the attachment and the enslavement that we experience. When we're truly in our awareness, that fellow's not there. Learn to trust that. And when you're learning to trust that, you're learning to let go. You're learning to let go of that which wants to control. That's the spiritual path. And in that letting go, there is no intellect. There is no formulas. There is no systems. This is very much a direct living experience before thinking of all the thought, before Buddhism even comes into life. Before that, learn to open up. With your awareness, learn to let go of that which is control, and you will come in contact. You will begin to awaken. You will begin to get an inkling, a sense, a feeling that there is something that isn't me that is here. Learn to open to that. Learn to develop a relation. Don't turn away. Face into it. Enter dialogue, talk. Feel it, invite it into your life so that it becomes a support with your life, with your practice. And like I say, believe me, whatever it is, whatever word you want to put on it, it wants to help you so much. So much. But you have to fulfill the conditions in order that it can help. To help support, to help encourage, to give you all the emotional support and warmth that you need in order to let go. To let go of this fellow that takes us in this endless round of rebirth. With this type of practice that we do, this takes us to the gate, takes us to the door in a very, very direct way. We don't have supports, we don't have signposts in the normal way. It is taking us directly to our true nature, our Buddha nature. Our awareness is Buddha nature, is our true nature, is our eternal nature. That nature which is beyond suffering, that nature which is beyond birth and death, has never been born and has never died, and is eternal, is spacious, is free. It's all the things that we aspire to, all the things that we would like to become. We are living out of that nature. Our awareness, the more that we can come just to that awareness, and like I've been telling you, it's not a thing, it's just open and all embracing of all of life, all of ourselves and all of life, to come and to abide there, abide at the door, as it were, to rest yourself at the doorway to the inconceivable, to your freedom and to your peace, to learn to do that over and over. And the more that we can come, the more that we can abide, the more that we can open up, that which isn't me will come more and more into our lives to help support us, to carry us through this practice, through our surrender, through our giving up of me and mine, which at times is very difficult, very, very difficult to do, very, very, very difficult to do. To give ourselves up, because this opens up so much that is very difficult to bear with. To have that support, to have, as it were, somebody with you who knows, they know. The Buddha knows, he knows what you're going through and he knows what's happening. Trust, trust, trust. So you feel supported, you feel buoyant as you give up, as you give yourself up. And I think when it comes to it, if we don't have that sense of support, I think there are certain things we can't give up. It becomes so difficult. If we think that we're going to go into a void, into a nothingness, which is what the self will convince us will happen, if I'm not in control, then I'm going to fall over a cliff. I'm going to fall into a void. I'm going to fall into darkness. This is what the self will convince us will happen if I give up my control. That's all it can know. It cannot know anything else. And it's our willingness to actually be prepared to fall over the cliff, to fall into the voidness, say yes, I'm going to fall into the darkness. That is not an easy thing to do. But if we feel that there is something other than me, something that is helping and supporting, have that faith that actually when I do let go, it won't be the void that I fall into, but actually something truly wonderful and truly liberating. Cultivate that faith and then all things then become possible. All aspects of practice become possible. All the things, the difficulties, the challenges, if that's the word, if that's the right word, the challenges that come to us in practice, when we come up against, we come up against things that are just too difficult for us to open up to, it will help to develop that courage to face up to things, to let go, to fall into the darkness. Fall into the darkness and see what happens. Try it sometime, see what happens. You may be in for a bit of a surprise. But to let go is not simple, it's not easy. And that support is there and it's waiting. And it's our true nature and our doorway, the gateway into our true nature is through our awareness. So I hope this is at least for some of you, you haven't heard me talk in this way before. Some of you, it opens a new, should we say, a new vista to your practice, to take you away from the two-dimensional practice that we can so easily fall into. Especially us Western. Eastern, I wouldn't need to talk like this in front of Easterners. Very little. They have that sense. They haven't lost that sense. We've lost it. We've lost it because we've created such a powerful sense of self. And when you create a powerful sense of self, that whole side of us is lost, buried. And then we only live a fraction of what we really are. Eastern people actually, provided they've not had the misfortune to be educated, are very much in tune, very much integrated, very much aware of that side. Like a child is, like a baby is. A baby has no sense of self, no sense of separation, but is at one with the whole of its nature. And it's when we take on our education that we lose it. We lose paradise. We separate ourselves, and for us Western people that separation is very, very profound, and we need to go back to being like a baby again. It's about learning to return to babyhood. It's the dharmic path, only this time hopefully not with nappies on. Well, we return to babyhood through wisdom. A baby has no wisdom even though it's at one. We return to the oneness, but this time we return with wisdom. That's the difference. But the oneness, the wholeness, the completeness is the same.
Is this comparable to what you can experience when you die also? The fear and the...
I'll let you know. I'll let you know. Give us your telephone number and I'll and I'll make a point.
So I was hoping that tomorrow's lesson, I hope you're not going to take us up on a plane.
Oh no. No, you take yourself up in your own aeroplane actually.
Does
that sound dramatic, does it?
Well, I very often have that picture of
letting
being
letting this is what the self will create, because it cannot know anything beyond itself. It can only know darkness and blankness and death. And that's why it is in a perpetual state of reinforcing it. I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. I like, I don't like, that means I'm alive. When I don't like, I'm alive. When I like, I'm alive. When I hate you, I'm alive. When I'm really kind to you, I'm alive. I'm alive, I'm alive. Ooh, I'm alive, I'm alive. And it has to say this perpetually. It has to keep reinforcing itself. I'm alive, I'm here. Ooh, I'm David, yeah. And this is what it, all the time. And we're in that constant, we're like this all the time. Just shaking all the time, so that I'm alive. And our whole life is experienced in that way. And it's learning to let go of that, because if I'm not convincing myself I'm alive, then there is death and there is blackness. It's inconceivable that there can be anything beyond me. And that's why we are actually, even though we have times of happiness and peace, you know, don't misunderstand that, but underneath all of that, we live, our entire life is nothing but fear. I know that, as I say, sometimes, you know, we can experience happiness and peace, and there's a lot of wonderful, you know, life can be very, very wonderful. And a lot of people do find life wonderful, enjoy life without doubt, and life is to be here, and just, you know, it's a fantastic experience, it really is. But nevertheless, it doesn't matter how we are experiencing it, that if we can really get underneath all of that, get right down into the root, we will see there is fear. And just to imagine there is something beyond me is impossible. This is where, this in the spiritual path, faith is indispensable. You cannot do this without faith. You have to trust that which you don't know. You have to put trust in the teachers, in the Dharma. Some element of trust. You don't have to necessarily buy the whole thing hook, line and sinker, but you do. There has to be an element of trust that allows you to step into the unknown. If you want to know, look, I'll take that step as long as I know where I'm going, what I'm doing, all the whys and wherefore, explain to me what will happen when I get there. When you do all that, then I'll do it. If that's your mind, the spiritual path is not for you. We need that to a degree, a small degree, a very tiny degree, but what we need is trust, that I trust what the Buddha, what the saints and sages down the years, down the centuries have told me, that this is how it is when we let go. And you have to put trust in that and say, okay, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, I will trust you. When you sincerely can bring that trust to yourself, then you can step into the unknown. Then you can let go. Then you can let go and fall into the abyss. That we have to bring to ourselves sooner or later. If you want it all nicely, neatly laid out.
Is it so that every time I have this steep,
mm-hmm,
sort of different ways, that I have an opportunity to jump every time?
Not jump, let go. Jump, that means somebody's doing it. You know, that sort of implies that you're, you know, it's like committing suicide. But actually what you're doing anyway, as we can see within ourselves, what we're actually, all of us are doing, are holding on with our fingernails. Our fingers, we're all like this, holding on. All I'm saying is just go like that. Everything's a trick of the mind. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by grief? Can you?
Well, if you have a sense that you're sort of ending, you know, that you're constantly ending, but then there's a sadness that follows.
Ending.
Well, just that things are impermanent.
Yes. Yes.
But then, if a sadness follows, is that another?
Well, that's. Well, ultimately, it is. But you know, when we embark upon the practice, and if it's truly in place, we are in a very real sense ending things. Bits of me and my begin to fall off. Bits of our possession, bits that make me alive, make me as a person, things that are precious to me, that they come to an end. And you see them coming to an end, and very often you can feel very sad for that. It's like you're losing a friend. But to get comfortable with that, because life is a continuum, isn't it? You know, once one thing ends, another thing comes along, and learn to go with things as best you can. But it is in that holding on, the things that are dear to me, I mean, they could be really, you know, nice things, relationships and really lovely memories and stuff. But also even the more unpleasant things are all a part of me, they're all part of my possession. And even when these more unpleasant things can fade and you can see them going into change, you can get a sense of loss. You can get a sense of a void that you've lost them, you've lost a part of your life. And that can bring all of that up. But that's a part of, you know, that's another emotion, isn't it? That's another part of, that's an experience that's been created by me and mine. And it's all part of the flux and the flow. All of these things. There's no exceptions. You don't make exceptions. There's that one fundamental rule, if you like, that one fundamental principle. That, you know, if we could all let go, if we could all let things rise and pass away, come to be and cease to be, if we could all do that, we wouldn't be here. It's that we can't do that. We all want to grab. It's called attachment, grasping. When we grasp, we bring the world into being. When we learn not to grasp, the world fades and dies. And we return not into the abyss, but we return to the fullness and to the richness of what we really are, of what our true nature is, which is beyond fear, which is beyond grasping, and fulfill the human condition in that openness of living life. That's what we are all fundamentally aspiring to. And all these bits and pieces, they're all reflections of me and mine, my possessions. You know, the self doesn't have to be a wholly bad thing. It can often be a very, very wonderful thing. It can be a very altruistic. It can do a lot of good in the world, can the self. But nevertheless, there is a fundamental flaw that's underneath it, that supports it, that keeps it all going. And it's that ultimately will always be just keeping the whole thing going in that basic well of unsatisfactoriness that just doesn't have an end. And to put trust into, there is a possibility of living life without the self, if you like, that life can be without me, without duality, that actually that is not like a blankness, but actually is the fulfillment of the human condition, is to live life beyond the self, beyond that coming to be and ceasing to be. And everything is an aspect of me and mine. And if you just got that basic principle in place of letting go of everything, letting go, having the courage to let go, because when you let go of something, that's a bit of me that goes, and that can be frightening, it can be sad. Let it go and trust that when I let go, that there is actually something beyond that which has been there all the time. That's not me and that's not mine.
I remember you stating emphatically that it was virtually impossible to attain this without the aid of a teacher. This is part of the devotional practice, I take it, is to put your faith.
It's to learn to surrender. You put yourself in the hands of somebody that has walked the path, that knows what needs to be put in place in order to walk the path, all the different features and the different qualities, which you don't know because you've never done it in your life. You can't know something that you don't know, and you need to find somebody to orientate you. To introduce you to the subtleties of the path, which you never ever read in a book. There are features, there are aspects, and I always remember discussing this with my Zen teacher years ago. I said, well, you know, practically everything you teach isn't in a book. And she said, well, no, this isn't in a book. The living reality is never in a book. All you can do is theorize and put approximations and rough sort of guides. That's all books will ever give you. But at the end of the day, this is a living experience. This isn't a theory. You're not sat at a desk getting a PhD in release from samsara. You've got to bring it. It's got to come alive. It's got to come in. It's got to be a real direct experience. And it's only when it becomes a direct experience can it change. Can you know it and can it change? Books will never take you there. Books are a two-dimensional approximation that always miss the mark anyway. And the subtleties of this, the subtleties of the path, and the subtleties that we come up against, no book has ever been written where you will find those subtleties. You will only get them from somebody who's walked the path, who can orientate you, who can make sure that you yourself are walking that same path. But even those subtleties, you have to discover them for yourself. And all the teacher can do is try and keep you on the straight and narrow, so to speak. But that unfolding of insight and subtleties are a part of insight. Part of it, to see that insight is not just a simple one-off thing that you can then just sort of write about. It's an unending. It's like I was saying to somebody today or yesterday that, you know, this isn't about walking down a path, about from getting from here to there. Logically, you know, that's what we like to think that it is, and you go down there. But actually the path, the truth of the path, how it works, is more cyclical. Is that you go around and you come back to the same place, and you go around and you come back. So wherever you go, you've always been that place before, so to speak. But each time you come round, it's just that little bit more subtle, that little inkling, tiny little part that sometimes can happen in a situation like this when, you know, you hear the saying, I mean, some of these people have been listening to me going on for ages, just so, you know, saying the same thing all the time. But when you come back to something that you've heard many times, it can go just that little bit. And this is not going in a straight line. It's like you're polishing, you're going around, you're polishing and polishing and polishing and polishing. And you're not going anywhere. You're not, you know, getting from here to there and reaching this goal that we all, a lot of us seem to think, imagine it to be a goal. But it's just this polishing, going round and round and round and round. And we have to learn that. We're not going to do that without people helping us. We don't polish things. We go like this. We go from here to there. I'm not going to polish. I'm going to sit and I'm going to study and I'm going to go through books A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, and then at the end of it, I'm going to get a certificate. What are you talking about polishing? The idiots don't. To learn to do this. And you need somebody to help you with that. Because you're not going to do it just by your own imagination, because you've never done it, and you certainly read it. But what they do is get you going. They get you settled. They get you settled so that you pick the subtleties of what this path is about, and then you can hopefully carry on your own, if that's the way.
It's strange you should say this about the psychic nature. There are certain books, especially Zen books. I've read them and thought I've understood them, and then years later I've gone back to the book.
That's right.
And read it again,
and it's completely different.
It's completely
different. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that's okay. That's what happens. And if you leave it a few more years and go back again, yeah, you know, you'll read it in a different way again, and it will touch you in a different way. That's the nature of what we're doing. It is incredibly subtle. It is incredibly subtle that no conceptualization can possibly touch it. It can't. It's not in that realm. It's in a two-dimensional theoretical notions of just creating sound, hang on experience. It's never the experience. And it's only when we when it becomes something living, something alive, as a direct, like I think I was saying to you the other day, if you want to know what an ice cream tastes like, you know, you can theorize, you can write, you can formulate it, you can approximate it, you can write books on it, you could even go on world tours talking about it, what an ice cream tastes like. And people can say, I know what an ice cream tastes like. There's only one way to know what an ice cream tastes like, and that's lick it. There's no theory there. There's no concept there, is there? That's the only way. I don't care how smart you are, I don't care how many formulas you know, and how many books you've written on the taste of an ice cream, and say, I know what an ice cream tastes like. You do not know what an ice cream tastes like. The only way that you know what it tastes like is when you lick it. And that is exactly how the Dharma works. You have to taste it. You have to do it to know it. You cannot know it by reading a book. You think you know. I mean, you can't know. The worst part about reading a book about the Dharma is that you think you know it. And when you think you know it, that blocks you off then to change, because you know it, you know how it is, you know how to do it, you know how to practice it. And so you don't want any guidance, you don't want a teacher. You can read it all in books, you know all about it. But in fact, until you taste it, you don't know it. You can't know it, it's impossible. This Dharma practice is an emotional living experience, a living emotional experience. It is not a theory. It is by direct engagement, by direct experience, that we begin to know what path is. And that's why books, they can be very useful, but they can be a tremendous mara, especially for us Western people, because we know everything, and all I got to do is understand it in the book, and then I know how to practice without a teacher. Well, I've never met anybody yet that's ever impressed me that is to practice without a teacher and done it out of a book, and I've never yet met anybody who's attained enlightenment by reading books. I don't know everybody, it's true, but I wouldn't mind betting 50 pence that there aren't any of them around.
So what does the teacher use, other than words, to encourage you to lick the ice cream?
By turning it back into you to put into practice, for you to live, to open up to experience it in the moment, in your life, in your meditation, in your life, for you to live it, to taste it, rather than go blah, 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 go whittering on and on and on and on with all lots of wonderful ideas that will just fill you up with even more ideas. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, that's what it's like, is it? Oh, this is what I do. Oh yeah, I'm making progress along the path now, because I've just understood all those things that he's just told me. You haven't made any progress along the path at all. You just filled your head up with more ideas, very profound ideas, no doubt. But that's all they are. And it's only when you sit down and you get that direct contact there before thinking. Good and bad, there's a koan there. I practice it for many years. There's the koan. Before thinking of good or bad, before thinking of do I like it, don't I like it, yes, that's good, that's bad, that's all these things, before that world comes into play, what is that direct experience? That's the licking of the ice cream. That's what you've got to do. You've got to lick the ice cream continually. I hope that it doesn't make you sick. Lots of different flavours. You can really get into it, actually. But
I remember in your own book, surprise expressed by, not just by you, but by others as well, as to how the path was unfolding for you as you were going through the various stages. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as in the traditional text. It didn't just surprise you, it surprised others as well. They, well, it should conform to this. But you said, well, no, it wasn't like that, not for me anyway.
Well, yeah, because I didn't have I didn't have the conditioning that I would have had in a particular tradition where I could hang those labels on the experiences. I didn't have that conditioning, so I didn't have the concepts to fit the experience. I didn't have the concepts to fit the taste of the ice cream. Nobody taught me. I learnt them after, but at the time I didn't know that licking an ice cream was an experience of cold. I didn't have the word cold. So I couldn't hang the word cold on licking the ice cream. But that didn't negate the experience. Just didn't have the concept to fit it. But those things came a bit later. Anyway, we've overshot as usual. So that will do it for today. Thank you.